It's a business that I've since become fascinated with. Joining us tonight is Jason Kotcher, owner of the Sim Racers Group in San Jose, California. And he owns a sim racing center in California, in that area. Jason, thanks so much for joining us on Into the Apex tonight.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
While we're talking, everybody check out simracersgroup.com, the website for the center. And really, to start off, Jason, I just asked you to talk about kind of a brief summary of what of this project and what it's become for you, how it started and that type of thing.
Yeah, I was always fascinated with motorsports since I was a kid. I had a whole career as a mechanic and test driver chasing race cars all over the world. In 2010, I got kind of tired of the road and came home to California, got a degree in finance. Mid to 2010s, I had heard about iRacing, but honestly, I thought it was just video games. I hadn't played video games since the 90s. And so in my head, so it was somewhere about Mario Kart. And I was a little technology out of touch. I don't know if you guys know or not, but there's been a little bit of progress and technology advancement since the mid-90s to now. And so in 2020, COVID hit. And they put, you know, the IndyCar, I'm an IndyCar fan, and the IndyCar series shut down. They put, I think it was 5 or 6 races on iRacing, and I saw it on TV. And just like, wow, I mean, blew my mind. The drivers were talking about the graphics and the detail of the force feedback. It looked amazing. So I said, I have to try this. Got my rig together early 2021 and started playing. And I just was absolutely, totally in love with it. Played with it for a couple of years. Went a little crazy on my rig. I didn't get to motion or VR, but stationary chassis, haptic feedback, wind sim, big monitor, top of the line, Fanatec equipment. And I just loved it. I mean, I always wanted to be a race car driver, and suddenly I was, with a schedule and rivals and teammates, and really got into the endurance road racing program. Had a couple of friends over, and I couldn't get them out of my rig. I mean, naturally, if they like motorsports and you plug them into something like that, they're going to love it. But it just sort of started to dawn on me that if you're into motorsports, like if you play basketball, you can go get a basketball league. If you're a baseball guy, you can go play baseball. There is a Tuesday night baseball league in your area. You can have it. As a kid and growing up in motorsports, it was your PlayStation or the real thing. And even go-karting can be at $20,000, $30,000 in a season, like no problem. And sim racing starts to breach that middle a little bit, but still even $10,000 in a sim rig is no big deal. And that prices a lot of people that are interested in and out of the market. So it just started to dawn on me with my friends that what if I had 10 of these things and I could rent them out and I could start racing leagues, and everybody was really excited about it. So I kind of had the idea, came to mind in June of 2022. And then in August, I decided to go for it, found this building that I'm in October 1st, and we opened the business October 15th. So it's about 4 months from what if I to sitting in it. So I'm a little bit aggressive with my timeline.
Before we talk more about the physical aspect and what you've created around sim racing, I have to stop and generate conversation on what you just said about the accessibility of motorsport fans to scratch that itch, so to speak. That's something I felt it resonates with me immediately about iRacing or any sim. That's something that we lack as motorsport fans. Like you said, you can. I always say golf. I compare golf. If you like to watch golf, you can head out that same day for a fairly reasonable price and kind of scratch that itch and feel like you're getting in there. And it's always true. The more you watch something, the more you want to do it. The more I'm as a fellow IndyCar fan, when I went to Mid-Ohio and watch IndyCar, the only thing I want to do when I'm there is go back home and get on the rig and drive the IndyCar at Mid-Ohio. And when I'm on the rig, all I want to do is go watch the IndyCar at Mid-Ohio. It's a cycle that it's a snake that's eating its tail. But yeah, it's the best we can get, many of us. Karting being maybe the cheapest, like you said, it's still expensive. You cannot just go out there and do it. But that hits quite close to home and really justifies what we're doing. But I had no idea it was such a short time from the time that you conceived of this to the time that you put it into play and it's in a physical location. And to me, that's where, I mean, literally rubber meets the road. You're in a physical space trying to bring people in and expose them to this. And it's first thing I want to ask is, when you get this going, getting the equipment, getting everything in place, how difficult is that to go from an empty space to a space that's ready to bring multiple people into sim racing?
Yeah, it's sort of a blessing and a curse. It was difficult. You know, the most difficult thing about getting the space was telling people that aren't into motorsports what it is. I'm not a CrossFit gym. I'm not a Starbucks. Sim racing, what the hell is that? I mean, businesses shut me down left, right, and center. They wanted promises from backers, investors, Santa Claus. I mean, it was, I was expecting it to be so challenging to get into a place. I mean, it's like an arcade. What are you talking about? And, but it also gave me time to do a lot of homework on sourcing components. I've been into sim racing for 2 years at that point. So I knew Fanatec. I had a CSL Elite. I intentionally went with stuff that was sort of mid-level for a couple of reasons. One, my DD1 will tear your arms off if you don't know what you're doing. The CSL Elites at that 6 Newton is enough to feel it. It's not enough to hurt you. Mm. No point in starting a business and hurting somebody and getting sued. So didn't want to do that. And the accessibility. I mean, when you go on Fanatec, especially since 2020, oftentimes it was like, in my mind, originally I wanted the DDs. I thought that was a perfect sweet spot, direct drive. You don't deal with belts. It's a good Newton force feedback, but they're also expensive. I sent Fanatec a message. I want to buy 10 of these things. And they told me no, which that kind of blew my mind. I said, I want to open a business. I want 10 V3s. I want 10 DDs. And they said, no, one per customer. There are parts of the business, like there's parts of it. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to throw them under the bus, but it was like, no, guys, like I'm not trying to hoard them and sell them for $5,000 a piece. I'm trying to open up, talk to me, Fanatec, hi, business, wouldn't have it. So I just started on eBay buying CSL Elites of pedals and wheelbase sets. And then got them and tested them and made sure that they worked. And so the challenges in finding the business actually gave me the time to source all the components. Monitors were easy. Computers are easy. Pedals weren't that tough. Wheelbases, really, I was looking at low mileage wheelbases. I ended up having to buy about 14 of them to find 10 that passed my quality. You know, someone, even at $20 an hour, which isn't a ton of money, I want someone to come in and sit down and feel like they're playing with good equipment. So there were parts of it that were challenging that I didn't expect. There wasn't a whole lot of it that went easier than what I expected, but we're very fortunate. And I'll tell you something that really actually surprised me. And that was the people that are in my inner circle that reached out to help me on a, we'll build this now, you pay me later. I mean, the guy that built my website was a lifelong friend. I owe that guy some cash. He's like, you know what? If I never get paid for this, that wasn't what it was about anyway. Happy to help. My cousin is in startups, marketing for startups. She helped me. My best friend is an IT guy. He made sure all my computers were dialed. I mean, the people that came out to help me really touched my heart is people I've had in my life the whole time. And that was not something that I had expected that went so well. They really made it possible for me not to have to spend more money, delay timelines. I didn't have to learn an IT position. I just texted my best friend and he was there for me. So that sort of stuff, I felt extremely fortunate to have. And it wasn't something that I had anticipated. But I guess when you start a business for yourself, there's all sorts of things you find out that you wish you knew that you don't know if you ever tried to do that. But yeah, it was a short timeline, a very fortunate in most regards. And I just really wanted to share sim racing with the world. I mean, I'm not, you know, $20 an hour isn't going to make me rich. I'm not trying to make $100 million. I just want to get it out there for people to be able to drive cars and have fun, something healthy and productive to do. And I'd also, well, I aspire to get 14 and 15 year old supervised kids in here to drive, because I want them, what passes for like driver training in this country kind of freaks me out now. I'm for when I was 16, like, yeah, cool. A couple hours with my dad passed the test. I'm driving. And now I'm on the road. Like, Jesus, I wish that guy had, you know, a sim rig at home. They don't have the finances to make sim rigs like this publicly accessible on a nationwide scale. But in the San Jose area, if you're listening and you know someone that's 14 or 15 years old, they're going to be driving in a year, bring them on in for $20 an hour. Let's talk about focused driving, situational awareness, vehicular dynamics. Make a mistake and learn from it with a reset button before it's 18 months down the line and they're on the freeway. That's a very different, the very different set of circumstances. So it's what we're trying to do here for the community, have some fun and do some racing.
That's something we've brought up with the real actual drivers, anybody that's driven from Lemons to Champ Car to IMSA, SRO, IndyCar that we've had on here. We always ask them if they have sim racing experience, break down for us the comparison of sim to real, real to sim, everywhere in between. And there's always some kind of comparison. And I've, since with this show, we've kind of gone, we've gone karting, we've done some karting trips, and feel like legitimately we can describe where the sim and the sim rigs and that experience carries over into that physical aspect, and then come back from it. And I feel like I've gotten better in the virtual space and the sim space after getting on some kind of real track, whether driving at pace speeds on Mid Ohio and VIR. When I was able to do that, I feel like I understand those two tracks in iRacing better, just because I understand the 3D aspect of it. It's weird. It's very weird. But it's interesting, and it gives you a little bit of even more of a hook into the sim to get out there and practice and get good in the sim. Especially like you said, younger ages, it seems like the fastest people, the quote unquote aliens in the sim, are 14, 15, 16, 17. And those are the kids that have a future in real motorsports starting young.
There's no doubt in my mind that, you know, Max Verstappen is a Formula One champion, is a multiple time now Formula One champion. He's on iRacing with like a 10,000 I rating and shows up and blows people doors off. There's no doubt in my mind that now with the accessibility of iRacing and the cost effectiveness of the seat time, that it will be a requirement. I mean, not that real racing will say if you're not sim racing, you can't race here, but just as a mental development, skill set development, you won't be able to be a champion if you started racing in your teens. I mean, you're going to be, you'll be 15 years old, you'll be 20 years behind. It cracked me up in the World Series of Poker. They were talking about, similar as poker online started to happen, the previous generation could only sit at a table and play with their friends one hand at a time. When it hit the internet, kids are playing poker 24 hours a day, 10 hands at a time. I mean, the knowledge, the skill set, the experience, the statistical processing that goes on in your brain, the future generations will get their doors blown off. You cannot possibly keep up with the skill set development. And as the sim racing becomes more accessible to the populace, the same thing will happen in motorsports. If you're not 15 with 20 years of iRacing experience, you're going to be 3 seconds off the pace. I mean, that's just all there is to it. So it would be great, you know, in 2025, if they're asking some IndyCar champion how he got started and he starts talking about the sim racers group, I'll have it record on the DVR for that one.
I certainly think that's realistic. I mean, that's where we're going. I mean, the pandemic really accelerated, really brought it sim racing mainstream. iRacing was on NBC Sports and Fox Sports. Like you said, the IndyCar, the still infamous Simon Pagenaud wrecking Lando Norris at the virtual Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I mean, that's legend now. And then R Factor with the virtual Le Mans. That's one thing I want to ask. So we visited a sim racing center here in Nashville, North Carolina, and I'm always interested. I know iRacing is not the only one out there. It's been our primary focus because we kind of invested so much into it. But I found that with the centers here in North Carolina, there is one made and one coming that we're going to visit. But R Factor 2 was more reasonable with their business model. What do you use at SimRacers Group as far as the software?
Yeah, currently we're on the iRacing platform, and I went with them for familiarity and ease of use. I've understood with, like I said, Corsa, their graphics are amazing. They've got rain. They do have the lead in various aspects, but it wasn't very user-friendly. For me, in my mind, this is where someone can come in. Hey, John, how you doing? Check in. I sit them down. They've played. They're on their own. If I got 10 people in here, there's 10 rigs and 10 questions. Now I'm running around all crazy trying to get everybody sorted. So for me, in a public space, the ease of use was a major factor. And I knew it. I mean, I've been on it for 2 years. I know the programs. I know the schedules. I know the leagues. I know everything about it. And at that point, obviously, it was just one less system that I had to needed to learn to make this place run. So obviously interested in R Factor, a lot of respect for Assetto Corsa and those out there interested to use them. But to get started, I just needed something ease of use and familiar to me.
Well, you're speaking our language because as you confirm that it's iRacing, I'm ready to plan a trip to San Jose. I think that would be the coolest thing. I mean, I think it's perfect. And I'm going to bring Patrick and Dre in here now. That's the perfect thing for iRacing and iRacing leagues because the three of us participate in and run iRacing leagues. And can you imagine everybody being in the same room? I think the cool thing is, I mean, not everybody has to be in the same room, but having a group of however many people in the same space, if you have a problem on track, you're gonna talk it out probably before you head home, I assume.
Yeah, we've had a laugh when you're on iRacing. If someone crashes you out, they're probably in some other country. It's kind of tough to do anything more than to call them a bozo on the text. But when you're in here and that guy that crashes you out is sitting 3 feet away from you, that's a very different situation. We joke about it. No fisticuffs in here. I'll throw you out. But it makes it much more realistic, dynamic, and it's a lot more fun. I mean, my goal is to make it a community. Another fun thing is like watch parties. We'll throw a big TV on the wall. We'll all watch the Daytona 500 together. You know, Formula One season will come around. If that track is on iRacing, then we'll watch the race at 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and then we can jump in and go do that race. So it's always fun. As you mentioned, like with Mid-Ohio, any track that you're not familiar with, it's one thing to watch onboards. Okay, it looks like this. Or you look at track map, maybe it's got some elevation. Okay, it's like this. But the car on the limit just about to slide through that corner that you didn't even realize was a corner is always fun to get a first person, first seat perspective. So the community aspect and having everybody together is a whole nother element that's a lot of fun. So we're certainly going to foster that here.
I do want to say, I think bozo is the nicest thing I've been called on iRacing. So.
I try to treat all the podcasts like their family show. So yeah, bozo. I saw it one time. I stole it. I didn't come up with it, but I thought it was hilarious. I have a button on my steering wheel that I hit, and it reads Italian hand gestures. And I just thought that was universally applicable. That can be a, what are you doing? Come on, let me through, or something a little bit more aggressive. But I set it up on all 10 stations. It's a down arrow on the steering wheel, and people ask me what it's for. And I say, if something happens you don't like, that's the that guy's a bozo button. And we had some friends over to run it. And they were running some pass or spin or whatever a guy didn't like. He hit the button and it said Italian hand gestures. And I got a chuckle because all 10 guys started laughing and 2 guys actually crashed because they were so busy. And they started laughing and then they crashed out. And it actually, I mean, I didn't think that I was a comedian, but it turned out to be a sort of unexpected surprise twist to the event. It was a lot of good chuckle.
Jason, I did have a question for you, actually. Obviously, you know, running a bunch of rigs in your brick and mortar, do you see any longevity difference with the DDs between, you know, maybe a belt-driven wheel? Have you run into any issues like that?
I expect that there will be. Like I said, I would have preferred to go with the direct drive for the realism, and it's just a step higher in quality of equipment. They weren't readily available to me, and Fanatec told me no, and quite frankly, that would have put a ding on the budget. I was fortunate to get most of the CSL Elites, being a previous generation, on eBay, and that saved me a couple $100 a piece. It was funny, putting a business together like this, any single decision, like if your goal in mind is that 10 rigs are going to be identical, such that no one has any excuse when they show up to a league that this guy has better equipment than I do. That was a priority for me. And also familiarity, equipment maintenance, these sorts of things. So I said, okay, 10 rigs identical. Well, if you make a decision that's a $200 difference on any single rig, now you're multiplying that by 10. That's a $2,000 difference in build cost. This had not crossed my mind when I was building my rig at home. So $200 out of 10 grand, I want the higher quality stuff. I spent my every dime to build this place and a few nickels that I had to borrow along the way. So those sorts of decisions had to be made. I would have preferred to go with DDs. I do expect in the future that there will be maintenance issues with the CSL Elites, hoping at this point that cash flow will become regular enough that they're, I mean, we want to expand into, I want a VR rig and we'll probably get a motion rig, and there's a whole world in front of us to advance to. Right now, I'm just trying to make friends, build leagues, and stay alive. So I do think in the long term, to answer your question, there will be some maintenance issues and availability issues with the CSL Elites, but cross my fingers, that will be far enough down the line that to step up and replace won't be an issue.
I actually had a question about what kind of rigs do you have set up at all your stations, actually?
Yeah, they're just right now they're just stagnant stations, stagnant chassis built up on wooden platforms. They were they're Conquer chassis, just a basic like $400 chassis that you would get, kind of my first, not quite to 80/20. Again, that's one of those things. I wanted 80. In my mind, it was 80/20s, DDs, top of the line computers, multiple monitors, the whole thing. And then it was a bit of a slap in the mouth when I added all that up. So I had to try to be smart and dial a few things back. So currently we're just on stationary chassis, to CSL Elite pedals, CSL Elite wheelbases. Did go big on the monitors because that's a wow factor and it's impressive. So there's 10 Samsung G9 49-inch monitors. And then above that is 10 Spectre 32-inch monitors, engineering monitors at each station to run sim racing apps. So I wanted people to have a track map. I wanted people to have relative, weather, driver info. I wanted people to walk in and say, this is cooler than I would have expected, or that I feel like I could build at home. I felt like if it's just a basic chassis and a basic wheelbase and a basic monitor, maybe it's fun, but I need to knock socks off. So we got the 10 static chassis. There will be some haptics that come in, mid-level wheelbases, nice quality, brand new HP gaming PCs, and multiple monitors per station.
Man, I just hearing that about the monitors, I was just like, man, I'm getting envious now. I need to go out there. I mean, come on. I mean, I only have like a 32-inch monitor, just one, and that's it. I 49, and you got 10 of them? Oh, man, I'm jealous.
I know, and he's talking about he wanted to do 80/20. I've been racing for sim racing for 10 years. I literally bought my 80/20 2 days ago, so still waiting on that. Like literally, and a couple months ago I got the DD, so I'm like, man, I'm behind. But no, it's good to hear, man. It looks like you got some really good stuff over there, Jason.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it was bigger in my mind, but my experience in sim racing for the last couple of years, the monitors were important to me because it's bigger than what the average guy has on their desk. and when people, no one has walked into that place and not said wow yet. So I feel like we've accomplished that there. I should have been on the podcast before I bought the monitors. You guys could have got stock in Samsung. It probably went up after I made
I mean, I think it's great. I mean, the large overview of this type of thing is I really would love to start such a thing myself. I respect and appreciate the full send, basically the personal risk that such an undertaking is, because it's big and it has its niche, but it can also be an unpredictable and risky thing to start, because motorsport, I think we're riding a very nice wave from COVID, for better or worse, from what that was. F1 popularity in the United States is skyrocketing. And I think all of that helps the virtual space, because everybody who gets into one form of motorsport can kind of go down the rabbit hole. And if you look up a place to kind of scratch that itch, it's few and far between. So I've found people that are passionate motorsport fans will travel. That it's very regional, and it's worth a trip. I mean, even if we didn't have a podcast, I would still have traveled 4 or 5 hours away to Asheville, North Carolina, to visit the Sim Racing Center that we found there. It's an interesting experience. But then I also am curious about, and I can imagine that you have just drop-ins, walk-ins, people that just want to kind of see what is this about, because it is a very maybe risky, but it's unique. In any community that it's in, it's a unique business and place to go for the social aspect, the skill aspect. I think it's good for sim racing. I think it's good for motorsport, because I think people can find motorsport through just showing up and seeing what a sim racing center is about. Have you seen people come in and be maybe have no motorsport experience whatsoever and kind of get drawn to it?
Not yet. And I actually found a place kind of in the back of a little industrial park that you wouldn't even know existed as you drove down the boulevard, specifically for cost of space rent on a monthly basis. Yeah. And I didn't want to be on the strip mall between the cigarette store and the laundromat. my target clientele, I mean, the guys that are coming in here now, I've been very fortunate to have been received so well with car clubs on Facebook. And with that in mind, the Ferrari club, the Porsche club, the NSX club, the Supra club, the RX-7 club, if I'm next to the grocery store, do they really want to park their cars there and have the kid open the door on the station wagon into the door of their Porsche, right? Probably not. So this little space kind of hidden away is perfect for nights and weekends. Cars can spread out. Guys are on Facebook talking about this will be our winter meetup hangout spot. You know, the fortunate in the timing of the year by design in some aspects that racing is cooling off. They're paving Laguna Seca. You know, the racing seasons are winding down. So if guys are looking for ways to continue to scratch that motorsports itch, as you said, or something fun to go do with their car club, this is a happy Saturday. Pull up at 10 in the morning, hang out for a couple of hours, drive your favorite track, and have a laugh. I was also very sort of fortunate in that being in Northern California, San Jose is Silicon Valley. I mean, it's kind of tech capital of the West Coast anyway. And so it was nice that I feel like sim racing will have a higher acceptance in a tech hub than it will someplace off in the woods that, you know, doesn't have population enough to support it or isn't necessarily tech savvy to appreciate it. So you have to be kind of careful to pick your location. I'm a California Bay Area kid, born and raised. So this is home, and for this to be my passion was a sort of a fortunate culmination of events, really.
I like that location and I like that concept because, I mean, you do. I feel like there's a fine line between having the passionate, knowledgeable motorsport fans. You mentioned, you know, kind of watch parties and leading into the sim racing. That's one thing I'm jealous of. I know Patrick said he was jealous and ready to head out there.
Yeah.
A watch party of like-minded people that could wax poetic about any part of a IMSA race or F1 race or IndyCar race is perfect, because you go to your local sports bar, you're not going to typically find that type of stuff on the TV. I think only our group at Petit Le Mans in 2021 asked for the sports bar to put on Formula One in the morning. So it's a rare thing, and it sounds like a good place to kind of build that community. Yeah. That's critical, yeah. Because
I had a laugh with friends. I realized what Drive to Survive had done for Formula One the first time that a Formula One result was spoiled for me in the grocery store on a Sunday morning. Because if you watch baseball or football or whatever, and you wear your favorite team shirt into the local grocery store, someone will start talking to you about that team. I'm a Ferrari guy. I could wear a Ferrari hat for 40 years and walk into any grocery store and they'll recognize the brand, but they won't tell me Leclerc got crashed out in turn one. And it finally happened earlier this season. The races come on for me at 4:30 in the morning. They're on the DVR. Love my DVR. Go to the grocery store, buy some breakfast. And the guy in line next to me goes, "Oh, crazy start. Tough for Ferrari fans." And it dawned on me, like, I never had to worry about that in my entire life, but the popularity of Drive to Survive, now everybody's a Formula One fan. And at first I was mad because you don't want any sport spoiled for you. And then I was in the car in the parking lot, yeah. Like, wow. I mean, they can say multiple times the fan base globally, you know, you can hear, see all the forums online or all that sort of thing. But until it ruined a race for you, something that never dawned on you before in your entire life, did it really click in my brain that racing is riding a wave, and iRacing and sim racing, especially like we discussed from COVID and Drive to Survive. So it's not the first time anybody has put something like this together. I'm hoping I'm ahead of the curve in a place that will adopt it and love it. You know, we are the Tuesday night softball league for motorsports fans. We just got our first Wednesday night. Two nights ago, we had our first league race. Was great. Rookie league guys that have some motorsports experience, but none of them have sim rigs. So a little bit of a crash fest, but this is the origin of it, you know, for these guys. And we would love a NASCAR league, we'd love a women's league, want a high school league. Like we said, we get some 14 and 15 year old kids some wheel time before they actually get out on the pavement. That's got to do some good for the community. So, yeah, there's some risk to it, but I've been very fortunate to have some help and a lot of optimism and support from people in my life. So extremely grateful for that. And optimistic that it being unique and it being in a place that should hopefully adopt it, that it'll fly. I hope so. I bet my balls on it.
You know, I don't mean to backtrack, but going back to just what Drive to Survive and the American company that took over F1 marketing has done for yeah. F1 and brought that here to us for a more accessible time, right? Because now the times are mostly 8 a.m., unless it's in the United States or Mexico. You know, so, I mean, years ago, I would do watch parties at my local bar. I talked to the local bar, said, "Hey, this race is on at 4 a.m., 3 a.m. They'd be like, "Yeah, we'll stay open for it." And we'd have four or five guys in there. They'd make us Bloody Marys, and we'd watch the races. You know, it was really cool. But I love to see what's going on, and it's got to be a big benefit to guys like you, you know, creating something that we don't see often at, you know, in a brick and mortar sim racing store, where now F1 is accessible to people and people watch it and they enjoy it. I have my local guy, I bowl on Wednesdays. He comes over and talks to me about everything. And I'm just like, he would have never in his, you know, 10 years ago ever brought F1 up to me. And now he's talking about it every Wednesday. So it's really cool to see and seeing people like yourself being able to do what you do.
I get a kick out of guys coming in talking about being big Formula One fans, and they race a Miata locally, or they do some solo two around some cones. "Hey man, you want to drive a Formula One car? You want to see what Suzuka looks like? Go through 130R flat out in a video game, and then you'll have a little appreciation for it the next time you watch the Japanese Grand Prix." Usually blows people's brains out. They cannot believe.
Put them in the W12 at Bathurst. That's always fun. I love it. It's my favorite. W12 Bathurst is a fucking blast.
That thing just rip the wheels off the car when the tub bounces off of the asphalt.
Hell yeah. Like, hell yeah.
You skip like a stone down the backside of that thing, and then you're man, hang on to it when you're on that downhill straightaway flat out. That would just be incredible. I mean, it's just, it's not possible, but.
I think the coolest thing about a physical space like this, and with iRacing, just gets me even more excited because we just, that's our thing here is iRacing. Eventually building yourself up with, when you have the clientele is creating endurance events, you know, a 4 hour, a 5 hour, a 6 hour race, something like that. Hell, even at some point, a 24 hour race, a 24 hours of Daytona that you host.
Definitely.
That just sounds amazing. Set up your sleeping bag in the center.
Yeah, exactly. I was just having a laugh with a buddy about that today. 10 rigs, 10 teams, call it a 24 a Daytona or short course or something to keep the action up. And, you know, 4 guys per team, maybe motorhomes in the parking lot. I'm drive security crazy, probably get me thrown out of here. But that would, something like that would be a lot of fun. Just the community and being in the same space and a laugh, you know, for like we discussed for a lot of other sports, that Tuesday night league, those guys are all at that place and you can, you know, slap a guy on the back and how you've been. And for iRacing, you know, you don't really have that. So with a place like this, we really want to nurture it. And hopefully with the increase in popularity in motorsports and something like this, that will come on. Yeah.
As I look at simracersgroup.com, I see so many opportunities for folks, leagues, HPDE experiences, driving academy, sim rig consultation, young drivers program. I feel like the options and the opportunities are endless with this. So many different programs and possibilities for folks that are interested in it. As we wrap up, how can folks learn more